Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at mofad.org.
This week on Meat and Three, we bring you stories about the coldest, darkest season. We start in a California vineyard.
It's cold, but it's wet, and things are still alive. There's a lot of life in this soil.
We explore two frontiers of cocktail culture: luxury ice, and the rise of non-alcoholic drinks.
The rocks traditionally becomes 25% of your drink's volume, and as such, it imparts smells and tastes.
And we investigate the risks facing New York City delivery workers during the harsh winter.
In the wintertime, after 2 hours of biking, it's quite easy, actually, for the bikes to spin upside down or slip or slide.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three, that's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E, for some food for thought to sustain you through the dead of winter. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Food Without Borders Radio, a show about food, politics, and identity. I'm your host tonight, Leah Kurtz, and in the studio with me is Amy Quichitz of Veggie Mias. Veggie Mias is a women of color, non-binary folks of color collective in which they highlight the importance of a plant-based lifestyle while also intersecting with race, gender, identity, class, and sexuality. Being brown, Latinx, non-binary, women, queer, genderqueer, and coming from working-class background and having other marginalized identities. They're passionate about spreading awareness of the lack of resources to healthier options in the hood, animal liberation, and environmental justice. It's a platform where women and folks share their families' recipes, their own recipes, and talk about why being vegan has connected them to their ancestral roots. Amy, welcome to Food Without Borders.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
We're great. We're really happy to have you. So first, I wanted to ask a little bit about where you're from and maybe one of your first food memories or what you grew up eating.
Of course. So my mom is Colombian and my dad is Peruvian. I grew up eating a lot of Peruvian food. So a lot of dishes are very like seafood-like. Or also papa la huancaina, which is like potatoes covered in cheese and things like that. So very like dairy-based foods. And then Colombian food is very meat-based. But I honestly didn't like a lot of like the meat stuff. I just ate around it, like the arepas with the rice. but yeah, definitely I would say like Peruvian food was something I really like enjoyed and also enjoyed in the past because of dairy and stuff.
Gotcha. And you were born in New York? Or
yes.
You're from New York?
Yeah, I was born here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so tell us just a little bit about Veggie Mias and mm-hmm. how it got started and kind of what that means, a collective, like what kind of, that kind of means for your work.
So Veggie Mias actually started with my friend and I, Mariah, and we were like in college and we were like, yo, we're not eating well, like we need to eat better. Let's like share recipes with people. But then college got like in the way and we didn't do that. So I was like, okay, Mariah, like I think I'm just going to make it a collective. She was like, yeah, go for it. And I was like, okay, because I want to know people's recipes. I want to know what people are doing. Like I want to find more people like me, especially because in college I became vegan because of two folks of color. But then when I got out of college, I didn't have anyone else to like share the journey with. So I was kind of like falling back into old routines. So I wanted to make sure to find people that I can connect with. So Veggie Mijas was such a great way to do that. I found so many people like just here in New York City. And then out of nowhere, people were like, hey, I want to do the same thing in other cities. And Oakland started opening up, then LA, and then so much more cities just started creating their own Veggie Mijas chapter. So it kind of just grew from there. And I'm so grateful to have so many people like do this collective with me, because it's like everyone, you know, it's not just me. So everyone has been putting in the work to make it a collective.
And how many chapters are there now?
So now there's like 10.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And they're mostly located in the U.S. or are there any outside of the U.S.?
There's not any outside yet, but there is people that are interested. So like people from like Peru have hit me up, or people from like Canada has hit me up. So we'll see. But for now, like there's only, it's always growing though. Like there's like 10 now, but there's going to be like 14 like next week, because people have been hitting me up and like we're scheduling talks. So it's like growing every single day.
And what does it take to start a chapter with mm-hmm. Veggie Mijas? Like what are the kind of parameters or what defines it?
Yeah, I think it's like I set them up with like a phone call with me, and we talk about, you know, why it's important for them. We talk about their time, right, to be conscious of that. And it's really like up to them. Like, for example, in Miami, like they're very environmental based. So now they're having a lot of like clean beaches day and things like that. And then here it's more about like making connections, because we're such a big city. So like having potlucks and like different kinds of events for that. So seeing like where they're at and what's their mission within Veggie Mijas.
For so sure. It's not necessarily about just the food. You're roping in about a everything. Lot of other issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, it takes a lot. It takes not as much. I mean, it's more of like, I feel like it's a siblinghood, like a sisterhood siblinghood. It's like kind of like a sorority. Like you literally just like call and then you tell me what you, you know, what your plan is. And yeah, we go from there and see what happens. And like I give them like a bunch of tools. You know, they meet the other group. We have like a whole group me of like all the people that are in Veggie Mijas. It's so cute. And yeah, and like we go from there. So it's really, really inclusive. Like no one's out like just like go do whatever you want. Like it has structure, but also has leisure to do whatever you want it to be.
And then the platform on Instagram is kind of where you talk about the individual people that are on it, correct me mm-hmm. if I'm wrong, and share some of like the things that are going on. Is that the central platform, Instagram?
Yes. So on Instagram, we share like the events that are happening. We share who's in the team. We share how the events went. And overall, just like what we're doing. But mostly what we're doing is like through talking to each other and, you know, talking on the phone. Like there's so much more that happens that people don't see on Instagram. There's actual work and community work done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to dial it back a little bit, what prompted you to become vegan?
So in college, I was like a hardcore feminist, like everybody knew, because I studied women's and gender studies and sociology. So I feel like once you open that door, you're just like feminist. And a lot of like my friends were like, okay, well, now you should learn about veganism. And I'm like, ooh, what's that? But luckily my friend was Dominican and my other friend was Cuban. And then they were like, okay, here, like, this is what, you know, this is the problem. And they made me watch Earthlings. so then I saw that and I was like, yo, never again. Like, I will never again eat meat. And that was it. Like, it was like a very dramatic cut. I didn't, like, slow down, go into it, nothing. And then ever since then, I was like, I can't be fighting for everyone's justice and then take a break and eat, and then knowing that my food isn't part of the justice that I'm creating. So definitely, a lot of reflection during that time and like why I was vegan. But at first, just like feminism, I was like, vegan, like hardcore, you know? And the way that you're exposed really to veganism isn't all inclusive. So I was all about like the animals at first, which I completely still am, but it was just that focus. So I was like animals. And like, I was like PETA. And like, it was just like, you know, all of these like things, just like feminism, you're like first exposed to like only white feminism. So then with time, I like found out why, how it affects people of color and, you know, all of this new door. And I was like, now this is the kind of like radical veganism that is needed. And, you know, I read the book Sister Vegan. I started reading more like content from folks of color.
And just for reference, Sister Vegan's by Dr. Amy Breeze Harper, just for people that you want to check it out. It's very good.
So yeah, so then from there I was like, okay, like this is something that I need to like show my folks, you know, back in my community. And going through that was, wow, like a whole new world. Like I went home and I always tell people, like my mom and my dad were like so surprised. They're like, you came back from college and now like you're gay and vegan. Like, what's up?
And I'm like, it's a beautiful combo.
Yes, the best combo. So then I'm like opening the refrigerator and I'm taking away like all the dairy stuff, all the meat stuff. And I'm like, we have to go to the supermarket and buy everything new. And they were like, what the hell is going on? But it was so funny because they were like, what the hell? But then after a while, like they were like trying things new and they were like, oh, this is actually delicious. Like blah, blah, blah. And my mom, she's Colombian. So my grandma didn't really teach her how to cook. So basically she learned everything on her own. And my mom really learned from YouTube. With this show called Cocinando con Wendy, which is actually funny because now on Veggie Mijas we have a segment called Cocinando con, like cooking with anyone. So like if people send in their recipes, it'll be like Cocinando con Jessica or something like that because
that's,
of like
that's
my
so
mom.
Great.
Yeah, so my mom learned through there, so that's why it didn't affect her as much to like kind of just change the dishes, because she was like, oh, okay, I'll just learn something new. It wasn't something that was like completely attached to her, you know what I'm saying? So for her, it was actually really fun to like learn new recipes, and now she makes like bomb vegan food. Like she makes like everything that we used to eat vegan, and it comes out like amazing, because like now Wendy apparently does vegan dishes on YouTube like in Spanish, and my mom's like, yo, it's like Wendy's my friend. Like she actually
full circle.
So it's been really fun with my parents. They completely understand why I'm vegan. I mean, sometimes my dad, you know, like he'll be like, do you want ceviche? And I'm like, no, dad, I've been vegan for like 4 years and you still ask me. Like there's obviously going to be those kind of things because like, you know, that's our culture. But at the end of the day, they do understand. Like I showed my mom Earthlings. I showed my dad What the Health. And like I'm always talking about it. And at first, oh my God, when I told them, they were like me. They were like, yes, you're so right. We went to barbecues and my dad would be like, oh my God, Amy's vegan now because of this and this and this. And it's amazing. Like you should all go vegan. How can you guys eat like all the meat? And now they're like back to eating like little seafoods here and there. But we don't eat meat in the house at all.
Oh, wow.
There's no animal products in my house except for eggs, and sometimes they use that. So it's been a real, like, amazing progress to see that.
Yeah, and that's such a role reversal of, like, teaching your parents new recipes and how to cook when traditionally that's, like, it goes the other way usually.
Definitely. And, like, my mom, she also learned new vegetables. Like, she didn't know what an eggplant was before. Like, I went to the house and, you know, introduced an eggplant. She didn't know what kale was. Like, all of these, like, little things that go back to our ancestral roots and, like, you know, eating from the plant. I always say, like, from the ground. I always say, like, if there's an apocalypse or something, like, do we really know how to survive? You know what I'm saying? Like, do we know how to plant our own food? Do we know what to do with, like, those hierbas? Like, some of us would survive, but not a lot. Like,
it's true, and that is a gap within a lot of people who are vegan where they're actually more reliant on industrialized foods than knowing how to farm or even being interested in farming and growing their own food. And it is a time, you know, constraint too, because it does require a lot of time invested. But you would think it would be stronger. But maybe do you feel like within the collective there is more consciousness around growing food and or just even awareness around the labor implications within the food system of foods that are hashtag vegan and cruelty free, but aren't necessarily ethically produced.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we talk about all aspects of that, and even our events, like we've had working at community gardens for the city in the Bronx. And, you know, we took like the whole day basically to grow and like, you know, remove the weeds and like do so much labor that we're like, oh my God, like this is so much work, but it's so much fun too, you know? And through those events, like we've, you know, growing food is so powerful. It's so powerful, especially when you're doing it with other people and in the community so other people can see you doing that. People were walking over the community gardens and being like, damn, I didn't even know I had a garden here. Like, wow. People like that lived right there. This one woman, she walked in the garden with her little kid, and she was like, and the little kid was so happy. She was like picking out basil and mint. She was like, mom, can we take this home? And the mom was like, yeah, of course. Like, you know, the lady came in from the garden. She was like, yeah, take it. This other man walked in and was like, I used to grow jalapenos back in my day. Can I come and grow them? And then he was like, yeah. Like, it was just such an interactive thing with the community. And people really need to see the power in growing your own food, especially in the community, and seeing how that impacts them, for sure. We've had events where we do plant and sip, and we like plant our own little foods, our own yerbas, in the little pots, and we like paint them, and we talk about the importance of growing our own food and appreciating the people that are doing that kind of labor for us, you know. So there has been definitely conversation about that, for sure.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. We're gonna take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history, and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Coral Lee, and I'm the host of Meant to be Eaten here on HRN. Every week, I look at cross-cultural exchange in food and contemporary media. What determines authenticity? What, if anything, gets lost in translation when cooking foods from another's culture? You can find Meant to be Eaten wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Food Without Borders on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Leah Kurtz, and in the studio we have Amy Quichitz of Veggie Mijas, which is a collective for women of color and non-binary folks of color, surrounded around the intersection of veganism, sexuality, identity, and reclaiming kind of ancestral stories and roots through plant-based food. Amy, welcome back.
Hey.
So we were just discussing the significance of recipes and cooking and food, and also growing food as a way to kind of like reclaim one's space and also just to learn and kind of like learn about where your food is coming from. I'm really curious about some of the actual dishes that have been popular on the platform with the collective, or even ones that you've cooked with your parents, like maybe what some of those specific ingredients are, flavors are that you've veganized, or if there's new kind of like combos that have come out from like local produce, but Peruvian or Colombian dishes.
Mm-hmm. So it's been so amazing because my friend Nova She made the papa la huancaina, the dish that I always used to eat as a kid, vegan. So my mom now makes it vegan, and it's like so delicious. So there's that recipe. There's also so many recipes like caldo de res.
What's in the first one that you were talking about?
The papa la huancaina. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, it's a secret. Also, there's a cookbook coming out for Veggie Mijas, so it's going to be in the cookbook. So that's
okay. You know, like, oh wow, when does your cookbook come out?
It comes out this month.
Oh my gosh! Yes. Congratulations! I do remember you posting about that. Now that's so exciting. For how long have you been working on that?
Oh my gosh! Since
that's a massive undertaking.
Yeah, it is. Since before November, okay. October. October, yeah. And Food Empowerment Project donated the money, some money to go to the illustrator. So, you know, that was paid for. But the printing
that's so great.
Stuff
Lauren
is all on me.
Yeah,
amazing. Yeah. So, Lauren, shout outs to you. So, yeah, that comes out this month. I'm so excited because there's so many delicious recipes. Like, all of the recipes that, you know, you think, like, damn, can that be vegan? Like, yeah, like recently I just came from UC Santa Barbara and they were like, oh my gosh, I wish I could be vegan, but you know, I'm Salvadoran and we have like these soups that like you really can't be, you know, you can't make vegan. And I'm like, which soup? She's like, sopa de patas, which is like legs. And I'm like, there's an amazing vegan Salvadoran chef, and her name is Veronica, and you should follow her on Instagram. It's Vegan Feast by V, and she does all of the soups that you ever want to make in, you know, she makes all the Salvadoran foods vegan. She's like, what? And I was like, yes, like, there's people now, you know, there is representation now, like, in veganism, like, this is, like, a whole new world. Like, people, if you want a recipe, you probably can find it, or like just hit us up in Veggie Mija, someone will know how to make it. So it's really, really inspiring to see that people, you know, they're like, oh, I can't be vegan because of my childhood dish. And I'm like, we can make that vegan.
That could be like the subtitle of your cookbook. Damn, that's vegan.
Yeah, literally.
But I mean, what you kind of going back to what you were talking about in the beginning, comparing feminism and veganism, mm-hmm. which it's always kind of frustrating when people are very strong feminists but don't see the connection to other forms mm-hmm. of suffering. But it's even more frustrating with this idea that the mainstream versions of both of those things are incredibly white and incredibly, I'm sure, alienating if you're not white. And you feel like, well, I have no place in this. And especially when it comes to food, because like you, and I felt this way as a Midwesterner. I mean, I'm white, but like I grew up eating a lot of meat and potatoes, and this idea that you're giving up your family memories and the flavors mm-hmm. of your identity, which is even more important definitely. If you're, you know, not represented. Definitely. And so meeting that need is incredible.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we did talk about that because it is hard, like memories and stuff like that you would attach to food. But you also want to question yourself through the process of decolonization, like, how strong are these memories that are attached to these products that are literally like killing you? Or you know what I'm saying? Like how important that is to attach it so hard to the cruelty of the system, basically. So it's hard. It's hard to have that conversation because especially people don't want to hear that. You know, people don't want to hear that and people don't want to admit that because they still want to continue eating those foods, which I don't blame, obviously. But it's definitely important to have that conversation and to question that for yourself.
And a lot of our foods only go back like one or two generations. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of digging into the histories that are much further back mm-hmm. and perhaps predate some of the kind of more colonial mm-hmm. institutions that are now what is the food system today.
Yeah. I was seeing this interview and it was like from the people that wrote on the Decolonize Your Diet, and they were saying how they found research on like some like colonizers' books, and like they were saying how like Mexican food, like in some ways, like they had like different shapes of like tamales and like different, like, I don't know, like different colors or something like that. And I personally just know one shape of it, right? And it's like, we really have to discover like how much they've taken from us through that process. How much did they change things? How much did they influence our food that we eat now? I think that's so important, because if we're saying that this is our culture, like, what is our culture then, you know? So I always try to ask myself that, for sure. Also, when I went through the process of veganism, I remember, and I always talk about this story, how, like, I came home and I brought quinoa to my dad, and I was making it, and he just, like, laughed. And I was like, why are you laughing? And then he was like, because I used to eat that when I was, like, really poor in Peru, and, like, that was the only food we had. My mom used to heat up the quinoa and, like, heat up the apples, and, like, you know, we all used to eat it when we didn't have another, you know, another dish to make. And I was like, damn, this shit is mad expensive. Like, and, like, quinoa was, like, the new trend or whatever. And I'm like, damn, I didn't even know, like, this was, like, low-key Peruvian. So even then, I was just, I felt like that opened the door more into the conversation of, like, okay, what else did you used to eat? Or, like, what else, what other tools did my grandma used to make things with? And then, like, finding out through, like, Instagram that, like, there's, like, 380 potatoes in Peru. And I'm like, damn, I've only had, like, three. Like,
wow.
Yeah. So it's, like, literally a whole new world. And I tell everyone all of, like, all the time, like, I'm like, you think veganism is limiting, but what you're eating is limiting. You're literally eating, like, eight animals. And you're, like, ranging through those eight animals. Like, there's so many new vegetables, so many new fruits that we haven't even tried.
Yeah, do you think you would have been prompted to even look at food or think about food that way if not through? I mean, do you think you would have come to some of those conclusions in another way?
Like
beyond like the vegan, you know, kind of gateway?
No. I think definitely not, because we see in commercials all the time, like, we see what other people are eating, we see what our family's eating, we see, like, it's just all the same thing. Like, there's no expansion to, like, what is there, unless, like, you go to, like, another person's house and, like, they have, like, a completely different culture and blah 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 blah. But even then, like, you would still stick to your regular routine of, like, the eight animals you, like, rotate
and not questioning it.
Yeah, definitely.
So you wrote an article recently that was incredible. Self. So can you talk a little bit about what that article was and maybe some of the feedback you've gotten since then?
Yeah, so the article highlighted why it's important for us, folk, the people of color, the women of color, the non-binary folks of color from Veggie Mijas, why it's important to be vegan for us. And that article covered food deserts. It covered the inhumane labor that goes into the farm factories. And it covers basically just the violence of capitalism through a lens of a vegan lens. And that article meant a lot for me. I literally worked on that article for so long with the editor. And when it came out, I was like, yes, like, people will know the truth. but yeah, the feedback I've gotten was amazing, like, completely amazing. Everyone was so supportive. I remember there was, like, one comment that was, like, horrible, but then we all laughed. It was, like, this white guy. He was like, boo.
They'll do that.
Yeah. But everyone's like, shut up, Josh. it was amazing. And it made a lot of people think. Like, I've gotten a lot of responses being like, I'm not vegan, but, like, wow, this, like, really made me think about my consumption, and, like, I'll definitely do better, like, blah, blah, blah. But yeah. The feedback was amazing, and I think that everything in that article was important to highlight. Like, for example, I always talk about, you know, how we think about the injustice in every single way. Even in veganism, there obviously is injustice within, like, the fruits and vegetables and stuff like that, the crops, but also just the violence that goes through the trauma of killing these animals. And you think, like, yeah, like, 9 to 5, like, I'm gonna go kill, like, 500 animals and then go back home. Like, it's not easy, you know? And these people can have that kind of trauma and bring it to households and bring that violence to households. So it's, like, all a cycle, and it's an important cycle that people should realize.
Yeah, and I was personally surprised that that they didn't edit out some of the more very leftist and really beautifully written thoughts that you have about kind of framing veganism within a very left, very kind of radical context that is built upon challenging structures of power. Can you talk a little bit about, especially within, I mean, our culture has always been terrible. Like the US has never really been very wonderful at all, but especially since it's just very obviously like no shame in how terribly racist our culture is becoming and continues to be. With that, I mean, did you have to fight for some of those lines?
I definitely... I feel bad talking about it, but it's fine. I definitely feel like there was a lot of like back and forth, especially with quotes that people have said. So like, for example, there was like this one quote where like we, you know, the person mentioned every single like fast food company or something like that, like brand names of like what they did and what, like, why that's terrible. And then, you know, editor was like, no, let's just like say like companies instead of like naming them. And I was like, I'm sorry, like, no, you know. But then under like the, we did like under the click of companies, you can see like what company specific. So like we found loopholes together that didn't erase the whole story. So there was definitely that. But other than that, like, we literally just talked it out. I felt like the editor understood what I was saying. The only thing was that, you know, self-readers, they can't, sometimes it's all about like health and like, you know, smoothies and things like that. So this was a piece that wasn't, you know, done before. So it was kind of like, you know, going back and forth through it, but very understandable, just being like, okay, people are not going to know what this is, so maybe just explaining this more and things like that. So that's why it took a while, because it's also like, I don't want to teach, let's say, white people, because, you know, white people are the mostly that reads them. Like, I don't want to teach them everything, but also I do want to make them understand why this is important. So it's kind of like, it was finding the balance of it, for sure.
Yeah, certainly self is like the platform that you, it maybe it needs to be said in most, but you would expect it the least. Yeah. It's not like New Left Review or Jacobin or something.
Definitely.
Although they don't let you really write a lot of that stuff either. They're not so pro. And that is an interesting idea of like the left is not very pro animal. And that needs to change as well.
Definitely.
But it is great that, and any piece you kind of, it is a balance of what's going to engage people but not push them away, but also keeps it true. Because in this piece, you were featuring, you know, individuals and their stories.
Definitely.
So it's important to, like, hold true to those quotes.
For sure. For sure. It was very interesting also to mention about, like, food deserts. And because, like, where I live, it's mostly, like, if you go outside, you can literally just find a Popeyes and Dunkin' Donuts, like, that's it. Like, around my house, and a deli that doesn't even have like bagels or anything. Like, it's literally just a gas station deli. Like, yeah. And I'm just like, okay. There's no vegan options or like vegetarian options even. Like, so definitely talking about that and why, you know, these are the options that capitalism has given to us, and we have to acknowledge like what we're putting in our bodies. Like, they're literally making the choices for us, and we don't even acknowledge that. And if we do, the folks that are, like, they're not pushing for the strive of, you know, non-animal consumption and things like that. So just questioning both questions as well.
Yeah, and while the solution to that is definitely systemic, what's advice that you do give to people who do live in communities where all they have are fast food chains and like small bodegas that don't have fruits or vegetables?
That's hard. I feel like it definitely would take community and not just one person to do that. But I mean, from my point of view, I know that Joanna, I remember we only have like a deli around like her previous house. And we would be like, yo, like, you need to get vegan cheese. Like, people are getting vegan now. He's like, what? Like, no way. And he was like, yeah, bring vegan cheese. And then he brought vegan cheese, like, for us. So, and then yesterday I was in the supermarket and So, like, I saw this article. Sorry, I, like, jump a lot. I saw this article, and it was, like, people are drinking more, like, soy milk or, like, different alternative kinds of milks rather than, like, dairy milk. So I was like, oh, that's dope, you know? I wonder what supermarkets. But then I go to my supermarket, and, bro, like, it's literally, like, all silk milk, like, all, like, almond milk, like, this whole section of, like, different kinds of milks. And the dairy milk was, like, small. And this is, like, my childhood, like, you know, supermarket. Like, obviously, there's, like, still mad meat. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there was a change. And I was, like, I told the guy. And I was, like, you see how the owner. I was, like, you see how there's so many milk alternatives now? And he was, like, yeah. And I was, like, you need to bring vegan cheese. Or at least have, like, a little small vegan section. Because people are turning vegan now. Like, this is our generation now. And maybe if you bring it, you can see what happens. He's, like, okay. Like, definitely. So he heard me out. And, like, maybe he'll bring it. Maybe he won't. But the guy in the bodega, the other guy did. So definitely asking your community, having that conversation, you know, with people, seeing what kind of change you can make in your own community. Don't wait for white people to gentrify your shit. And then you see vegan shit all over the place just because white people came. Stop trying to make veganism only a white people thing. Don't give them that much credit. First of all, so definitely advocating for your own community for sure.
Yeah, and realizing these are human beings that place food orders, mm-hmm. and maybe if you go in and they recognize you and you have a relationship, like you like what you did.
Exactly. Like my dad, like he knows this guy since like forever. Like we've been going there, so like me asking him, it wasn't like out of the blue. Like he's not like, oh, this like white little girl, like, or like, you know, brown little whitewashed girl. Like he knows me, so that was like another great like community just talking about like what's important to us and like what's gonna be important for us for sure.
Yeah. So in the last few minutes, I just wanted to talk about where we can find your work. Like you were talking about your cookbook coming out. So is there any more information about like where that's gonna be sold, how people can find you and Veggie Mijas, your Instagram handles or your website or anything you want to share about what's kind of coming up for you in 2019?
Yeah. So you can find us at veggiemijas.com and the cookbook will be on the website under shop or like tienda, I think it is. and they can find me on Veggie Mijas, the Instagram. And what we have coming up is just definitely a lot of like events in different cities. So this weekend we're going to have like a homemade dumpling event. So we're going to learn how to make dumplings with Vivian Lee, for the Lunar New Year. So that's going to be so exciting. I'm so excited to learn. And yeah, just so many different events. Like we are having yoga and healing in Washington, D.C. We're having the beach cleanup day and talking about environmental justice in Miami on February 24th. We're having the first Phoenix chapter meeting on this Sunday. So to be caught up with all of it, go on our Instagram. If you identify as a woman or non-binary person, you can also just go on our website and see the Join Our Collective list. And we have tons of positions, tons of new things that you can do with the collective, and or either just join the National Collective list. So the National Collective list is where you can put your name, your email, and then optional your pronouns and your ethnicity in order to see what how many people are vegan that are women or non-binary in your city. Wow. So we have like different tabs on a Google Doc and it's like over like 20 states and you can find people in your own state. I've known people that literally are like 4 people in the Ohio list and like they like hung out and now they're like best friends because that's of the amazing. List. It's amazing what you see in the community. Like people come into the potlucks and they're like, oh, I hung out with her yesterday. We went to the J Balvin concert. And I'm like, yo, like that's literally what it is about. Like going to like these ratchet ass little concerts in the hood, like together, but like, you know, make it radical. So yeah, definitely joining our collective through that.
That's great. And mm-hmm. What can white people do to help support your work and give
That's
up some privilege?
That's an amazing question. So what they can do is, if you're in a city and let's say you own a restaurant or something and you have utensils or anything like that that's like from a restaurant or something, you can definitely talk to an organizer and see if they need anything. So like for potlucks and stuff, you know, donating those kind of things. Money always for the donations for the new projects we have.
And they can donate on your website,
yes,
right?
So on the website you can see the information for the handles for donations. And then just spreading the word for sure.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being on Food Without Borders, Amy.
Thank
it's been
so
wonderful
much for
to talk
them.
To
Bye.
You. And we'll be back next week with a new episode. In the meantime, thank you so much. We're on heritageradionetwork.org, and you can find us also on Twitter, Instagram. We're also available to listen to on Spotify, iTunes, and Stitcher, as well as on heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.